wanted to talk a little bit more about the college football playoff because I saw some numbers that were pretty stunning. Vince, I think we all agree that a big reason for this expansion is to increase the revenue stream. COVID had a tremendous impact on a lot of programs. It led many schools out there to cut a lot of sports. And so I think they're looking at a way to try to recoup some of that money. But I just saw this, and I thought it was pretty interesting. Now, I had no doubt that going to a 12-team playoff would generate more revenue. There is a proposal out there that says a 12-team playoff could be worth about $1.9 billion annually. Now, right now, the college football playoff gets $470 million from ESPN. Also, when you count ticket sales and sponsorship deals, that could push the total takeaway to more than $2 billion a year. In 2019 and 20, the Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, Big 12, and South Asian Conference got $67 million each from the college football playoff. The other five conferences shared $92 million. But when you talk about those kind of dollars, that's pretty huge. That's a difference maker when you go to this 12-team playoff, isn't it?
It is, and when you consider the desire for them to make up the revenue that they lost during the pandemic, where else are they going to generate that kind of money? Nowhere else. That's how they recoup as quickly as possible. Not that anybody is broke, but when you're used to making a lot of money and then some of that is taken away from you, you want to get back to making the money you're used to. And look, like you mentioned, sports being cut and scholarships not being, you know, welcomed for returning players and just all kinds of ramifications down the line for what everybody went through, with the TV money that's just insane being thrown around out there, you're going to go to the well that will bring you the most, and that's what they're doing.
Does it surprise you any that in the 7-year history of the playoff as we have it right now, that the national championship game between Alabama and Ohio State was the least watched of any of the title games in the 7-year history?
I would say yes, because of those brands that we're talking about. You know, if it was Alabama and then someone that maybe it doesn't have the national brand, then you would think that might be one, or if you, it was an assumed mismatch. I don't know that year was an assumed mismatch, Jimmy. Do you recall?
Well, no, I don't think people thought Alabama and Ohio State would be a mismatch because Ohio State had just beat Clemson. But yeah. I guess I'm a little surprised with the brands that it's the least watched title game in 7 years. I thought the numbers would be better, and in part because of COVID, because I was thinking still that people that weren't able to get out and do much during COVID, some by choice and others and some by mandate, that you would probably have more eyeballs on it just because it was a national championship. But to be the least watched in the 7 years surprised me a little bit given the names of Alabama and Ohio State.
Yeah, and some of that could be fatigue for those same teams, right? I mean, each year we get more and more of the conversation, like, what can we do to not just have it be the same teams every year? So it could have been that. And also, as we talked about during the pandemic, a lot of people had really difficult personal life situations to deal with that they, you know, maybe didn't go to college sports or didn't have the enthusiasm to seek it out. And maybe as more and more people try to get back to normal in their lives, maybe more and more people will start, I mean, you're seeing it in attendance at games, but maybe the viewing will return back to normal if people have some of their personal lives, in a better place, and then they feel better about, you know, going elsewhere and not just be focusing on those things.
Yeah. So interesting situation with the college football playoffs. All right, a couple other notes. Thought this kind of interesting. So, one, quarterback Derek Carr says that if he is not with the Raiders, he would probably quit football. Okay, that's – I don't know about that. That'd be turning away a lot of money, of course. And it also sounds like he's pledging his loyalty to his head coach, John Gruden. I don't know. But anyway, that's what he said. And then – the Jags pass game coordinator, Brian Schottenheimer, said that they've not named a starting quarterback yet. Gosh, who did the Jags Trevor Lawrence. It's still too early to say how this thing's going to play out. I think I have an idea. Vince, do you have an idea?
Yeah, well, the social media joke was that it's Tim Tebow. That's why it hasn't been announced, because it's Tebow. Funny for social media not happening, but, I mean, it's just so stupid. You want to have competition, but, like, or so Tom Brady's backup, or are you going to say, well, it's an open cup. We want competition. We'll see how this plays out. And I know that's an extreme example, but you name any true NFL starter, there's not competition. The ones that are up in the air, yes, that's fine. You can say we don't know, even if there's the anticipated leader. But you take the number one overall players, is highly regarded of a quarterback prospect as we've had maybe since Andrew Luck, and your franchise needs the jolt that he can give you, and you're going to act like somebody else could win that job? Please. Please.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. So if you take him out of the equation, which quarterback starts first? Will it be Zach Wilson? Will it be Trey Lance? Or will it be Justin Fields?
Zach Wilson.
Taking Lawrence out of the equation. Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Zach Wilson. Yeah. I mean, it, a lot of it, too, Jimmy, is where you draft him. You're more invested in him. You clearly are saying that they are your franchise and your future. It's not like it's different. You know, back to the Lawrence thing, it's not like you're drafting somebody in the second round and okay, maybe it is more of a competition. You'll see what he looks like. But when you take the first pick, the second pick, third pick, things like that, those guys are going to start out of the gate. And history shows that all those first round rookies, well, not all of them, but a lot of them, I know Jordan Love didn't last year, but those that are taken very high in the top 10, those guys are starting.
So do you like Zach Wilson as a pro prospect better than Sam Darnold, who was drafted by the Jets, I guess, 3 years ago?
You know what, Jimmy? Yeah, I've actually thought about this because I think that Sam Darnold was not coached up well in a bad situation. He's still very young. I think he's younger than a number of the guys that were drafted this year. So I think he still can, if in a good situation, I still think he can be a really good player. You know, Zach Wilson, I love his arm. You hear a lot of really positives about him. He is a one-year guy. I mean, really blew up his last year. So anytime you don't have an extensive resume of productivity, it kind of gives you a little bit of pause. And then level of competition is something you have to wonder about also. So he's not a sure thing to me. I think it's very close. They both have skills, arm talent, tremendous arm talent, and a little bit of gunslinger to them both. But it's hard to evaluate Darnold from the mess he had with Adam Gase, admitting that he didn't coach him right with the New York Jets. And it's very, very close. It would be tough to say one over the other. If you force me to, I guess I would probably say Zach Wilson, because you'd have to fix some wrongs on Darnold, whereas Wilson, maybe you just develop the positives. So I would lean towards him a little bit, but it's very close in my opinion. What about you?
I'm giving a slight edge to Zach Wilson. Now, just to clarify, Zach Wilson was a multi-year starter, but you said just one really productive year, that being his last year. Okay.
Exactly.
He started against Tennessee, and then he had a terrific bowl game the year before, and I remember sending out a tweet about how impressive he was. He was like 18 for 18 in the bowl game for 300-something yards and four touchdowns. And, of course, I was blasted because they said, look how bad the competition was. Zach Wilson didn't any good, blah, 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 blah. And he goes on to be the number two pick of the draft. So, anyway, but I I'll say this. I liked him. I thought he was a good college quarterback. But when I saw him at Neyland Stadium playing for BYU, I had no idea I was looking at the number two pick of the draft. No clue. I did not think he was, at that time, that good. Did you?
No, because of the stellar defense that Tennessee played, especially late in that game. I mean, how could he be good? I'm just kidding. No, I didn't see that level of talent. Similar, the bowl game before, the year before, you thought, all right, this guy's going to have, some momentum coming in. We'll see if he develops. But I didn't see that at the time. Saw a guy with arm talent, but not a number two pick. And it really last year is what elevated him. And then obviously, if you have the measurables, that makes a big difference too.
Yeah, and he had the mobility. That was pretty clear. He looks a little bit lean to me. So I don't know. We'll see. But I'd give him a slight edge over Darnold, but not much. I don't like either one of those as being as highly drafted as they were. But, they could both prove me wrong. Darnold isn't through. He could still prove a lot of folks wrong. When he goes to new scenery and so forth, he may end up developing into a pretty good quarterback. I'll say this, though. Typically, if you become a really good NFL quarterback, you've done it by year three. Very few have gone past that and showed signs that they were going to be exceptional NFL quarterbacks. So we'll see this in that regard. Not saying it's impossible, but typically you've shown it by year three.
So. And sometimes you can show it, and then it goes away, Jimmy. So even if you show it early, it may be a flash year or two, and then you never get it back. There's those cases too, and it could be that way with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, that's a good example. That's exactly right. I'm really curious to see what happens with him with Indianapolis. He just obviously lost his confidence, I thought, with Philadelphia, made a lot of mistakes. And 2 years before that, he was playing like an MVP in the NFL. So I'll be really curious to see what happens with Carson Wentz this year with the Colts. Tennessee will be playing in the College World Series this weekend. They take on Virginia Sunday, 2 p.m., John Wilkerson and Vince Farrar will have the call for you there. We do want to bring you some comments from Tennessee baseball, and this is after Tennessee was able to clinch the Super Regional with a 15-6 win over LSU. Here are some postgame comments from Coach Tony Vitello, as well as Jake Rucker and Evan Russell.
Tony, the bats weren't exactly cracking last night, but the guys did just enough to get the win. Did you have a feeling they were going to unload today?
I don't think you want to ever kind of, predict you're putting up a touchdown or anything like that. But you saw a looseness there that made you more comfortable. The Florida game down in Hoover, I think we won 4-0, but we saw some ridiculous arms and the park was playing big. That was kind of a vibe before the game that was similar to today, where it's like, all right, I mean, you got to put your work in and you're going to play 9 innings. There's a lot that can happen, but you sure feel good about it. And that was, again, kind of the vibe the guys had today. And I don't think they get to that unless, they've accumulated. We're at 50 wins and 16 tough losses. There's been a lot of lessons learned because they've been good enough to be in an SEC final or a SEC series that's really hyped up, or it's, supposed to be the most watched one of the weekend. So you kind of get some trial and error there, and you keep, kind of in your – finding your best, kind of presence for each day. And today was good.
Tony, after the first month of the season, it didn't really seem like any of your players slumped for long periods of time. Just what kind of went into not letting a bad game turn or a bad weekend spiral into a bad show?
That's, the weight room's behind us. I think toughness and willing to accept hard times was a part of that because there wasn't some great, sunshine and rainbows is what Russ used. I'll say that, first of all, we got video of him trying to catch as a freshman, so if anyone wants to see that, there's definitely no sunshine or rainbows going on for that. But it's been a grind, and there's some guys on our club with scars from a lot of tough losses and a lot of bitter pills to swallow. So when personal success doesn't come, I think these guys are able to forge on, and they did so in a fashion that found a way to win some games ugly early in the year and put the personal deal behind them, where, maybe they weren't getting theirs or they weren't living up to other people's expectations. and all that, I think kind of led them in the right direction.
Yeah, for both players, I know that, you know, when you're a college baseball player, everyone always talks about, you know, Omaha, like you want to get there. But so this is something that obviously you want to celebrate, but y'all seem to have a team that could go to Omaha and win the thing. So how quickly does your focus shift from celebrating this to kind of locking it right back in and getting ready to go, you know, win more baseball games?
You know, it's probably cliche to say, but I would say for me personally, it's right now. You know, even though it was a nice celebration out there after winning today, but you know, for some reason it's expected. We have a talented group of guys. We have a lot of guys that want to win, and I don't think anyone wants to stop playing with each other. You know, there's a lot of guys, including the guy to my right. You know, I would love to play forever with him, to be honest. So, you know, I don't think anyone's ready for this to end. And I know for a fact no one wants it to end, you know, with us holding our heads down. So I think there's a lot of guys that are ready to get back to work tomorrow and, you know, see what Omaha's about.
Yeah. Like Evan said, we're ready to go right now. I mean, you know, obviously not a lot of teams get the chance, teams and players get the chance to go to Omaha, but obviously that's an awesome feat. But like you said, we're going to be ready to go. We're going to be lifting tomorrow, get after it tomorrow, and just get ready to be focused on going to Omaha, focused on that first game. And so just going back to saying, not taking anything for granted, just focus on the task at hand, and we'll be fine.
Hey, Tony, Will Heflin, you know, did not pitch this weekend. What does that mean for his arm? And, you know, is it, you know, I know it's a good thing, but in your mind, what does that do for next week, getting ready for the College World Series? And then also just kind of talk about Heflin and everything he's meant to the program. I know he didn't get out there and get on the field, but what he's meant leading up to everything.
Right. Well, he put us in a position to be more successful this weekend, not just get here, but more successful. And he also kind of solidified the pitching all year long. I mean, we know we got some grinders on the position side of things and can play defense, beat you different ways. But there's pretty big roles that have to be locked down on any winning team. And so it starts a long, long time ago, what he's done for us this season. And then it really starts a long, longer time ago, if that's even accurate, to try and change his program. It's why he came here. So it was huge. And I think he's just as happy as these guys that the thing ended today. But we all know he would have manned up and done his deal.
Comments from Tony Vitello, Jake Rucker, and Evan Russell. And Vince, one of the things that I got to ask this question the other day, but one of the things that I think indicates that Tony Vitello has built a program and not just a team, but he's built a program, is that Tennessee lost Garrett Crochet and they lost Alex Solari and they lost Daniel last year. Really good players. The first two I mentioned are really outstanding players. And yet they come back in the College World Series. That tells me they won't have the fluctuation that you have with Rod Delmonico, who could take a team to the World Series and then maybe finish, maybe not even make the SEC tournament for a couple of years and then go back to the World Series. What do you think of that?
I agree with that. And if you look at it, they really this year, there was people wondered about their pitching staff a little bit. You know, you still had some of the returning guys in the field with Jake Rucker and Max Ferguson, Connor Pavloni. Ferguson and Pavloni are preseason All-Americans. And, you know, Drew Gilbert showed flashes of being a really good player. And then, you know, Beck, and you felt like pretty good. You had a good shot, a good feel for what the core group would be in the field, but you just wondered without Crochet about the arms and the pitching staff. But that was even with Jackson Leith, and you were able to have this kind of success without him, and he might have been their number one starter this year. He's that good point. And Jimmy, if you think about last year, they had a healthy Jackson Leith, and if they continued on the rest of the season with Garrett Crochet, with Alaric Solari and Zach Daniels, as you mentioned, and Tony hasn't shied away from it. He thinks I think he might have said it there in the post game avail that he thinks that maybe they could have made a run to the College World Series last year.
Yeah,
15-2. So it who knows what that year would have been like. But there was a lot of talent there, but they bounced back from it. And I think that'll continue next year. We'll see what the draft holds. The draft's not going to be the full-length draft. I think it's going to be 10 rounds this year. So you may lose, you know, more guys that way, but you may still have, because of the culture and what's being built here, you may have, you know, guys maybe waiting it out and still enjoying their college experience, even if they can go pros, because of how much fun they're having and they're winning. So they've got young players too that I think you'll see as time goes on. Kyle Booker's in the outfield, and they have Blake Tidwell is going to get better, and they have another really good recruiting class. And then there's a kid, Ben Joyce, too, that didn't get a chance to pitch this year. They have a couple of guys that didn't get a chance to play this year that may have, you know, bigger roles next year, plus the freshmen coming in. So, and then the JUCO route is always a possibility, the transfer portal is always another possibility as well. You're right. It's the program, and it's the culture they've built, and I think it's sustainable.
And by the way, I want to mention this because it slipped my mind the other day. But so you're talking about transfer portal and so forth. Well, the Lady Vols in softball, they were one pitcher away from being really good. They just couldn't find somebody they could rely on outside of Ashley Rogers. So Tennessee is probably, I don't think he's signed anybody. The Lady Vols in softball are probably going to try to hit the transfer portal to find a second pitcher to Ashley Rogers, which would benefit them. And here's something else. They typically have over 300 in their summer camps, and the softball camps are going on right now. Due to COVID, they were limited to 125. But they had more than 300 applicants to try to get into their camp. And so they're running multiple camps now to try to accommodate so many different people trying to get into their camp. But it was reduced to 125. So I thought that was pretty interesting from the softball team and from the weeklies that they're stretching out the number of camps so they can get more campers involved at Tennessee.
Yeah, good right. for them that they're not trying to just limit it, that they're trying to still get all those others in, because that's very valuable to get that face-to-face recruiting and get the camps it back on campus again.
Absolutely. Major League Baseball, they're cracking down on pitchers using illegal substances. They have not supposed to be using them, but Major League Baseball apparently didn't really enforce it. In fact, some players said they encouraged it. And so now they're saying we are going to level the playing field by not allowing them to use foreign substances. Well, Tampa Bay pitcher Tyler Glasnow has a torn UCL and flexor tendon. He said it was caused by not using his foreign substance of choice, sunscreen. Vince, does he have an argument?
No. look, it's amazing that he would be that honest. I mean, clearly he knows that there's not repercussions. They're not going to do anything, you know, to guys that may have done it before. But this kind of, you know, it just muddies the water even more when guys are putting up numbers now, and you have to wonder how much of it is due to cheating. But then if you think that, where's the cutoff line? Like, what? I mean, you hear of cases of this happening and you assume it's happening, but you don't know who, when, to the degree, what they're doing. And so it makes it all a big pile of unknown. And you know, you can go back to Hall of Fame debates for guys that we're in the steroid era and that whole debate on what to do with them. But it makes it hard to really truly evaluate it all, because I think a lot of people are, but do you wipe out everybody's numbers? So what do you do with it? It's just, it's really messy, but it clearly, for Major League Baseball, for them to just set, a uniform type of punishment for it shows that they really truly don't have the greatest intent to really clean it up. Like, this has come out and they look bad. But that, you know, there's different degrees of it, and they're not going to do it case by case. They're just going to do it uniformly. And that, I don't know how much of a deterrent that's going to be honest with you, because they knew this was happening, and if they really wanted to, if it was truly an issue, they would have done something about it. Now that it's public, now they're doing something about it, and it's not strong enough, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, it's a 10-game suspension with pay.
Right.
Isn't that like a vacation?
For a starting pitcher, I mean, what is that?
two starts, maybe. Possibly.
Right, right. That's what I mean. I mean, it's not the same. Yeah.
And you're still getting paid. I mean,
right.
Now, they also said that if they think that a catcher is trying to supply it and sneak it to the pitcher, then the catcher gets a 10-game suspension. Or if there's an infielder that's trying to sneak over there and supply it, then that person gets a 10-game suspension also, again, with pay. Now, an interesting note about that is that the first 2 months of the season, teams hit a collective .236. That's the lowest average since, I guess, like 1968. Well, in the month of June so far, whenever it came out that they were going to start, they were going to eventually do away with it and really enforce it like June 21st, the batting average is way up to .247. So it's an 11-point improvement in that regard. But they also talked about several pitchers like Trevor Bauer, Kenley Jensen, Gerrit Cole, and Josh Hader having a considerably less or decreased spin rate in recent weeks because they've been trying to wean themselves off of this. Now, I got to get on Trevor Bauer just a little bit here because he's been using this, which is a violation. You're not supposed, even though they weren't enforcing it, as he said, it's not a rule is not a rule unless you enforce it, but it's still a rule. So he was the one that was very outspoken about the Astros cheating. How about you being a hypocrite? So you're over there doing this, so and you're gonna rip the Astros. Which you have done for a long time. So, fooey on you. Anyway, that's my thought on Trevor Bauer. Is that a good word? Fooey on you? Yeah.
It's like, that's right. You cleaned it up for sure.
Yes.
It's like being on top of a guy on a golf course and forcing him to say uncle. You know, it's like something that was said before a while back. But
I don't know why it reminds me of this story. So, many years ago, back in my Louisiana days, I was doing a story about a lot of litter that was on a particular lake. And so this guy said, man, I got to show you this litter. It's unbelievable. We got to clean this up. We need to arrest people. It's awful. I said, okay, I will follow you till you show me where that litter is. He ran every stoplight and every stop sign to get there. And I'm thinking, well, what's worse, litter or you breaking every stoplight and stop sign rule we got here? So I guess it kind of depends on your, you know, your point of view. He thought it was fine to run the stoplights and the stop signs, but don't you dare litter in my lake. Okay, right. Well, both of them are wrong. Anyway, I was just kind of upset with Trevor Bauer about his comment where he was ripping the Astros all this time, and then he's been using a foreign substance. So, they said they did a study for a couple of years on this, but here's my problem with Major League Baseball, and this goes back to the steroid era. They did have a rule against using it. They just elected not to enforce it. Now, part of that came, as I remember reading this, and I guess it depends on who you listen to, part of it came from the owners and the commissioner. Baseball, the union said, basically, if you enforce this, we're going to go on strike. And so the owners said, well, hell, we can't afford another strike. We just went on strike in 94. We've had 7 strikes in X amount of years. So they turned a blind eye to it. Okay. Both parties were wrong about that. But so now they got another rule in here that they haven't been enforcing it, and because batting averages have plummeted, so they've decided, let's go enforce it. I'm not a fan of the commissioner. I do not like him. I don't think he's a good leader, and I think he is not consistent with his message about anything.
100%, I agree. I mean, there's so many botched situations, and even when he tries to explain stuff that may be in the right direction, it's still just mishandled in his wording. So yeah, he is very low on the list of you rank commissioners in pro sports, and he may very well be at the bottom, and there's strong competition on that front as well.
Yeah. there's better competition for at the bottom than there is at the top, right. As far as baseball commissioners. Yeah. So, and I will be interested to see what the batting averages look like, not just the remainder of this month, but over the next couple of months. Are we going to see the batting averages continue to increase as pitchers are not allowed to use these foreign substances and to increase their spin rate, which it doesn't increase velocity, obviously. According to what I'm reading here, it increases the movement on the baseball,
yes,
which makes it harder to hit. So.
Exactly, because some guys that don't have the highest velocity, if they have really good spin rate, the velocity plays up. And it plays up because it also has movement. It can rise. And so then it looks, you know, a couple miles per hour faster than what you think it is, or maybe what you've seen from that pitcher before. So the movement and playing up, those are the things that can be the huge advantage of the pitcher. But another factor is just in the way the sport is being played, the way guys are hitting up, you know, home run, strikeout type of swings and approaches in Major League Baseball, and trickling down. So it's hard to know how much of it is that approach and how much of it is the substances being used by pitchers.
And that's why I want to see what these batting averages look like over the next few weeks or months. That could give you an indication. There is a phenomenal soccer player known worldwide, Cristiano Ronaldo, and he went to a press conference, and at the press conference he removed two Coke bottles from the podium, and then he said water, and because of those actions, Coke lost its market value. Its market value dropped, Coca-Cola's market value dropped $4 billion. I don't know how in the world they calculate that. But anyway, I started to feel sorry for them until I saw they went from $242 billion to $238 billion. That's still a lot of money. And, yes, I know $4 billion's a lot. Vince, I just thought that was interesting that that kind of a move would cause Coca-Cola that kind of market value.
Well, first of all, not many people in the world, if any, move the needle worldwide like Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't know how you estimate that either, Jimmy, especially over a short period of time. Like, if it's going to devastate that company, wouldn't that be sort of a residual thing over time? I kind of question, just naturally a little skeptical about that. Is it impactful? Probably, but to that degree, I have a hard time with that. That just sounds like a blown up type of spin story to be able to run with it, because something like that did happen that, you know, doesn't happen every day. So I don't know. But he, if anything is going to move the needle worldwide, it'd be that guy doing that kind of thing. And he's just that popular around the world.
So I wonder how much water went up. Did Aquafina or somebody else benefit from this?
Right. Yeah, if it was the NCAA, that stuff would never happen because they'd only have NCAA cups.
That's right. So, well, I figured somebody had to benefit. If somebody lost that much, somebody had to cash in a little bit. So, all right, a couple other notes. The All-NBA team is out. First team, it's Nikola Jokic, and then Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, Giannis, and then Kawhi Leonard. The second team, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Julius Randle, LeBron James, Joel Embiid. Third team, Kyrie Irving, followed by Jimmy Butler, Bradley Beal, Paul George, Rudy Gobert. Any qualms with the first teamers and anybody on the second team you thought should have been on the first team?
No, I think those are pretty accurate, Jimmy. Obviously, winning, you move up on the ladder oftentimes when you're on winning teams. And, I didn't have a problem with Nikola Jokic getting the MVP. He had to carry more of a load when Jamal Murray went down. So, you know, Joel Embiid. I mean, all those guys, I think, were in pretty much the right spot. There's just only – there's if the when they only do five players on a team, which I think when you're doing a lot of the teams, they should just be the number of players that you can use at one time. You know, like the SEC in football has 8-man basketball first team and 8 men on the second team. It's one thing if you have a tie, but that's not why they do it. They do it because they want to get more people represented and honored. So you're going to have elite players on second team. So, no, I don't really have a big issue with that. Did anything jump out to you?
Not really. And one of the things I think that was impacted – injuries. You had some people that didn't play as much. Obviously, in my opinion, LeBron James is one of the greatest players in the world, but he missed some games and didn't put up the numbers in part because of that. So I didn't have a problem with him not being on the first team. I think it was pretty fair. While I shouldn't have been, I guess, I was a little bit surprised Jokic was the MVP. Not saying he didn't deserve it, I just I thought that it would might go to Curry because of the phenomenal numbers he was putting up. His team wasn't as good as Jokic's, though. I think he's a heck of a player. And here was a key thing for him. He played every game. Mm-hmm. And I think he probably got some props for that as well. His numbers were outstanding, too, no question about it. But he was there. What's that old saying about the best ability is dependability?
Availability.
Availability, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was Jokic this year. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And dependable as well. Dependability, he had that also. And by the way, real quick, we were talking NBA earlier, Jimmy. The Jazz are still without Mike Conley for game five. So that's an injury that has hurt the Jazz. They, you know, it's even more that's on Donovan Mitchell not having Mike Conley there to help them out. So that's another noteworthy injury on their side as well.
Now, he was listed as questionable. Has he been ruled out?
Last I saw is that he was out for game five. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, when we come back, if you don't know how to pronounce Omaha, we'll have a couple people that will explain to you how you pronounce that city where the College Baseball World Series is. We'll also have some comments a little bit later from a variety of folks. We're looking at maybe bringing you comments from Marquez Callaway and Alvin Kamara. They are Saints, and they are also former Tennessee football players. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Hines, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.